From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1874 on Chautauqua Lake. An inventor and a Methodist bishop founded what we now know as the Chautauqua Institution. They created it to be a teaching camp for Sunday schoolers, and gradually the institution expanded its mission. Theater groups performed, music, visual arts, and in 1893, they built an amphitheater. You might know some of the names that have performed or spoken at Chautauqua's iconic amphitheater over the years. Susan B. Anthony, Booker T. Washington, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Nelson Rockefeller, William Jennings Bryan, Harry Belafonte, the Everly Brothers, Johnny Mathis, Bruce Hornsby. We could go on. But with old bones, the amphitheater at Chautauqua needs changes, and so the institution has been raising nearly $30 million to essentially tear it down and rebuild a new one in its place, made to closely resemble its predecessor. Some call this progress. Others view this as destroying a piece of history instead of rebuilding within it. Well, each year, the National Trust for Historic Preservation names its 11 most endangered historic places in America. For 2015, one of the nation's most iconic national attractions is at the top of the list, the Grand Canyon. Guess what's right behind the Grand Canyon? The amphitheater at the Chautauqua Institution. A number of Rochester area preservationists have gotten involved, and this hour we aim to do two things. We want to understand the fight over Chautauqua. Why are so many Western New Yorkers so passionate? How would you rebuild it without taking it down? And then, if we were to make a list of Rochester area landmarks that are endangered, and we have, what would be on it here? My guest for the hour, Wayne Goodman's the Executive Director of the Landmark Society. Good to have you here, Wayne.
Hi, Evan.
Larry Francer, Associate Director of Preservation for the Landmark Society. Welcome, Larry.
Hey, Evan.
Well, Caitlin Mavis is a Preservation Planner with the Landmark Society. Nice to have you, Caitlin.
Thanks for having me.
Dirk Schneider is a Principal with CJS Architects. He'll have something to say about all this. Nice to have you, Dirk.
Thank you, Evan.
And Brian Berg is on the line with us. He's with the Committee to Preserve the Historic Chautauqua Amphitheater. And I think you are in Chicago, though I don't know, I confess. Brian, where are
you? That's correct. Good afternoon, everybody.
Nice to talk to you, Brian. I've got a lot of family and spent my summers down at Chautauqua rowing canoes borderline illegally across the lake to sneak kids into the institution, campers every summer. So I know the area well, and I know why the folks that I know down there are passionate. But Brian Berg, why to you is the amphitheater in Chautauqua so important to Western New Yorkers, and why should it be important to all of us?
Well, the amphitheater, like the great buildings across our country, the United States Capitol, or you look across the ocean to Westminster Abbey, is a much-used public building that's been both a repository and a source of America's culture and history. It was built in 1893, and it's been called the beating heart of the Chautauqua community. It's where its program and its mission has all happened on its stage for 122 years. It's where people like Bobby Kennedy and Thurgood Marshall advocated for social justice, where Susan B. Anthony advocated for women's suffrage, and Eleanor Roosevelt advocated for women's rights. It's where Marian Anderson on her retirement tour stopped in 1959. It's where a young Brian Berg listened to B.B. King in 1970, long before he ever moved to Chicago, in the hotbed of the blues, and met Lucille, and was moved by a young Van Cliburn at the age of 21 playing the piano. It's really where these people who've spoken and performed have helped shape and define the core of American life, its ideals and its goals. So it belongs not just to Chautauqua, but to the entire country.
Brian, before I kick it to the panel in studio, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I know it is a beautiful structure, but they are saying, the folks at Chautauqua are saying, okay, Western New York needs this, let's build it, let's rebuild it, let's build it essentially the same way but better, and let's keep its historic sort of quality by hewing as closely as we can to what it's always been. And let me read just a few comments along these lines. Jonathan Schmitz is Chautauqua's archivist historian. He said, we want it to be a better facility, safer and more comfortable. He says, change is necessary to meet the 21st century needs for patrons and performers, and a new facility would improve comfort, safety, and the overall viewing experience. It would make load-in easier for musicians. It would expand seating, create an orchestra pit, take better advantage of technology, all the things that this project is designed to do. Where do you disagree with that? He says that he's a historian. He appreciates the history.
Well, we agree the back end needs work. That's not a historic part of the amphitheater. There has not been a architect or preservation group that has studied the space, is familiar with the place, that says you, they all say you can upgrade, innovate, make all the programming needs, make it more accessible, make it more convenient, and a whole host of improvements without having to tear it down. You know, the incremental changes in some of our great buildings and theaters in the Midwest, be it Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and to take the Eastman Theater in your backyard there, have all been undergone incremental change and have been improved. Wrigley Field today has a batting cage underneath its dugout that some thought were unimaginable. And it is, you know, a 21st century ballpark. And to replace this historic amphitheater, which Jeff Simpson brought a host of people, including Paul Goldberger and Kent Barwick, former president of the Municipal Art Society, to the amphitheater. And Kent Barwick himself called the amphitheater one of the great buildings of America. And he and others have listed suggestions and offered their advice and recommendations, most of which had been ignored, but have proven the point that this is a building that every stone should be turned to be saved and preserved for future generations. And as Dirk Schneider could point out, and other architects in the region familiar with the building, that this is not a complex structure, nor one that would be difficult to upgrade and improve. So from the get-go, we have always believed that this was a building that needed some repairs, but should be and can be innovated for updates at a fraction of the cost. And there's really, you know, no other structure like it. And just as like Independence Hall or some of the ballparks or Cleveland Severance Hall, your own Eastman Theater, it's not one that should sort of vanish. And certainly by replacing it with a Disney-like, Las Vegas-like replica.
Well,
and, you know, if we were talking about a state-of-the-art state-of-the-art Frank Gehry concert hall, or then we'd probably be having a very much different discussion today. But what they've chosen to do, we think, is not appropriate and not true to Chautauqua's mission and its history, to where it learns from its past in order to go forward, and taking away its most iconic building where all this history has taken place really cuts across the grain of the brand and the mission of what we believe Chautauqua has stood for since 1874.
Well, I don't mean to draw too grandiose a comparison, but let's be clear here. It's been put next to the Grand Canyon on this list, so it maybe deserves this. I think of the Acropolis. I'm pretty sure they still perform there, and they haven't destroyed all of the old architecture around it. And it really is. The Amphitheater of Chautauqua is a gorgeous place. It's a historic place. If you've ever sat there, you can think of Susan B. Anthony on stage. But the quality, to me at least, has always been of a great experience. Now, let me ask the architect.
And that's the experience is really what separates that venue from any other place. As millennials and people seek out, and happening in your own town, the adaptive reuse of historic buildings and is what are driving people to these places, and the amphitheater is no exception. And if I might quote Stephanie Meeks, the president of the National Trust, who said the story of the Amp is a story of America's political, cultural, and spiritual identity. Before TV, radio, and the internet, America had the amphitheater to communicate and share the news, music, and gospel of the day. For well over 100 years, it's occupied a special place in American culture, and we believe a solution can be found to ensure it stands for the next 100 years.
Well, Brian, I've already have the phone ringing, and I'm going to get to some of our phone calls in just a moment here. I haven't even mentioned the number, so there are enough of our listeners who've been there and are interested. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Dirk Schneider is a principal with CJS Architects. And Dirk, we've talked on this program about the kind of Rochester landmarks that we're going to talk about later this hour. The kind that you look at and say, that's historic, but I think it's kind of crumbling. Can it be saved? There's a plan to knock it down. Is there a better way? When we look at these old structures, can you really create the kind of change, you know, whether it's at the amphitheater or elsewhere, adding 500 seats, lowering a floor, or raising it for musicians, that kind of a thing. Can you do that without tearing down the essential structure?
Yes, and I think we looked at it up close and in details with the information we were able to gather ourselves, because the institution wasn't willing to share the information that they have gathered with us. So our 10 opportunities that we developed was really based on our own field measurement. So what we came up with is that you can make the area, the amphitheater, ADA accessible. If an orchestra pit is needed, you can get an orchestra pit in. I mean, we've proven a lot of ADA accessibility. If you think a little bit outside the box, Eastman Theater, how to get on stage. I mean, before it was kind of impossible, but inserting the benches and the balconies and narrowing the hall gave us a way to hide a ramp. So I think there are ways, if you put your thinking cap on, that you can really work around some of these issues that you otherwise might see as unimaginable.
Okay, and could you do it with a price tag that is sort of in line? They've raised about $30 million for the rebuild here.
I think looking at what we're proposing, and but not knowing all the background, I think our proposals would be cheaper. And the other good thing is our proposal is feasible. So you can do one portion, stop when winter hits or a bad season, and it wouldn't delay maybe opening the amphitheater the following summer. Their proposal raising it is kind of an all or nothing approach, and at that point you're at the will of the contractor and the will of the weather, which we know last winter was a little unpredictable.
Wayne Goodman, let me ask you from a Rochester perspective here, why is the Landmark Society here? You know, we're two hours, 15 minutes, we're away from them. Why are we so passionate here about this project?
Well, Evan, I think that Brian, I think, spoke very well to that. And that is that the AMP is certainly a Western New York landmark. And I think that when you put it in a greater context, it's part of American fabric. And I think that our organization, which as I think most people know, I think in Rochester and Western New York, that our organization has a long history. It's a very well-respected organization across the country. We're one of the oldest preservation groups in the country. And so when there is a resource as important to the national fabric of America as the AMP, when there is an endangerment, I think it's really incumbent upon our organization to do what we can. Now, granted, it, as you pointed out, it's two and a half hours away, and so we're limited in what we can do, but we can certainly be a voice. And that's what our organization has tried to do. And I think that voice has been fairly strong. We've taken an official position that we believe that there are several different treatments that should be considered prior to demolition. Once this is gone, it's gone. And folks in Rochester know all too well what happens when we lose the, you know, I've yet to met really anyone in Rochester that thinks the current Amtrak station is better than the old Claude Bragdon station that we lost. So I think Dirk's done a great job. I think we're fortunate to have the architect on the project right here in Rochester. And I think that when you look at not only the importance of the site, but also factor in the feasibility that this brings, I think it's fairly obvious why we have the position that we have. I think that I should just maybe point out that when we look at the economic factors in preservation projects, I don't think anyone is suggesting that every single building could be saved or should be saved. And I think that there's plenty of those examples. This is not one of those. This is not a complicated building. I think that Dirk has shown that these treatments can be put into place that saves the structure, really creates most of what is needed, if not everything that's needed, at a fraction of the cost. And every single preservation organization, regionally, locally, nationally, Paul Goldberger, the renowned architect critic, well, it's David McCullough, everyone has been outspoken of this plan.
And I think also would like to add to that looking at this project as being reversible. So if in 20 years someone says, well, technology is changing, needs are changing, you can reverse it. We can subtract pieces again that were added. And I think that is just also so unique to Chautauqua. The campus has grown organically. Even the amphitheater has grown organically. It's not, we're not saying that it should be mothballed and keep it the way it is. change needs to happen, but change can happen in a much more sensitive way.
Well, let me ask Larry and Caitlin to get into the conversation. Larry's the Associate Director of Preservation for the Landmark Society. You've seen projects across the country where, yes, we've seen projects where a building essentially knocked down and started new. And by the way, with the old station in Rochester, I had never seen it. And when I saw pictures, I'm like a lot of people. When you see pictures, you say, wait a second.
That's right.
We had that thing.
We would have had, you know, Evan, we would have had people. We talk about heritage tourism all the time. That station, and I'm like you. I mean, I've been in Rochester for 5 years. I was blown away when I saw photos. If we had that station, I mean, that would be an economic engine.
I had no idea. Yeah, right. I had no idea. And so there's that. And then there is, Larry, then there is the effort that says, okay, we're going to knock it down, but we're not putting a McDonald's there. We're not putting a hotel there. We are trying to rebuild with a respect towards what we've seen, and that's what the designs. The idea is you barely notice it's different except for it's more comfortable, it's safer, et cetera. It's different than what happened with the station now, is it not?
But the experience is what you brought up earlier, sitting in a historic building is very different from sitting in a new building that looks like the old.
If anybody's been to Yankee Stadium, that's a good example.
So terrible. There's nothing that can replace what it feels like to walk through or sit in a historic building. And absolutely none of us are saying, leave it alone. Don't touch it. But we're also saying, this building is nowhere near a point where demolition is required because it is so unsafe and it is falling apart. That's not this building. And again, the Disney experience is something in itself, but it's not like being in a historic building.
And Caitlin Mavis, with the Landmark Society, we've had conversations about what is feasible to be saved and what's not. And some of the lampooning of preservationists is that you never let any building go down, that you just will never let go. And first of all, I'd like you to comment on that because I know that's unfair. But also, this is a case of an extreme building that this is kind of an Acropolis-like building that you say, what's going on here? You know, why are we knocking it down? Do we have to do that?
Right. And like Wayne said, we never advocate that every single building has to be saved no matter what. Our position with discussions like this is that we say, well, time out. Let's all take a break here and evaluate all the possible solutions. What's the most economical? What's the best for the community? What makes the most sense? And we haven't had the opportunity to really do that in this case. And, you know, I think we get, as preservationists, we get a bad rap for wanting to save every building, which is not true, because the ones, you know, that we say, okay, there really is no solution, those often don't have the same kind of public discussion.
Have you ever stood in front of a bulldozer?
I have yet to do that. I guess I should add that to my bucket list, maybe.
See, no, I bring it up because that is the caricature. It is unfair. It is a little more thoughtful than that. But if you're just joining us, we're opening the conversation with a look at the Chautauqua Institute's amphitheater, which was listed this year for the National Trust for Historic Preservation's 11 most endangered historic places in America. And that's because there is a plan to not only rebuild it, but essentially knock it down and replace it for a number of reasons. Structurally, safety, to increase comfort and seating. And our panel has been talking about that. I'm going to get to your phone calls in a second, but Brian Berg, who's on the line with us from Chicago, he's with the Committee to Preserve the Historic Chautauqua Amphitheater. What is the timeline, Brian? Where are we in terms of understanding? You know, is there a vote? Is there public input? What happens next here?
I would like to add what you were saying before.
Sure.
While they talk about their goals and programming and what's wrong with the amphitheater, there has never been a historic structures report that documents where there is a need for replacement of materials or what needs to be done. It wasn't until the National Park Service only a couple months ago intervened and suggested that the institution do an engineering report, and it is our hope that once that report is complete, the institution will share it in its entirety and not edit out any part of that report. But prior to now, even at this point, there has not been any substantial evidence that the amphitheater needs to be torn down, and especially the front end of the house. There's, you know, typically, for instance, you know if you have a problem, and you generally do an assessment, and I think any property owner would understand that. But for somebody not in the real estate, as we've identified the amphitheater being the sacred heart of the institution, well, if your heart has a problem, and your doctor would then send you and give you a referral to a cardiologist, not to a dermatologist. And in this case, the institution has relied upon an architect who is skilled and specialized in residential design and does not have experience in doing entertainment venues, let alone historic preservation. He, too, is from Chicago, and I'd be hard-pressed to find colleagues who of mine in the architecture, design, and preservation field who have ever called upon Mr. Serena to do a project anywhere near this in scope. So, they could talk about and make the claims what needs to be done and all that, but it's really hard to substantiate or to lend any credibility to their claims. Now, to your question about what's going on now is that at the next board meeting at the end of August, which coincides with the end of the season, so all the visitors will go away, then the board will sit and make their decision. And again, by a vote, and it's our hope that this would be a transparent process, and the board members would we would be able to identify as a yay or nay. And there's also an advisory panel session that was another suggestion made by the Park Service, comprised of several members of the preservation groups in the region, as well as some appointed members by the institution who are at this point making some recommendations. But they don't have any authority over the institution because they're relying all upon, private funding of about three or four people. In fact, the largest donor is the person who hired Marty Serena to build a new house on the grounds for him. So we think that, part of this issue is really along, if this is your sacred space, you treat it as such, and you should have had given it its finest care and put the finest people, just as if this was, a parent of yours who had a problem. You'd want to make sure they got the best care so that they would be rehabilitated. So so I think that hopefully answers your question where we are now.
Well, let's get to the phones, which have been ringing since the start of the hour. If you're wondering why are we talking Chautauqua and Rochester, well, our Landmark Society here is involved in this effort. It's just over 2 hours away. It is a historic site. And, if you haven't been there yourself to see what whether it's a musical performance or some of the great lecture and speaker series they've had over the years, they've had some of the biggest names in our country's history there over the years. So let's grab our first phone call. It is Wiley in Honeyoy. Go ahead, Wiley.
Hey there, Honeyoy Falls.
Honeyoy Falls. Well, sorry, Wiley. Yeah. Go ahead.
There's a falls here, not a lake. Anyway, I don't know. Everybody probably is going to repeat me. And what your guests have been talking about is pretty much what I wanted to say. But it's the idea that you got to tear down stuff all the time. And it's happened. I just was thinking while I was waiting here, and I made a list, and one of you said something about the train station. You didn't know. Well, I was a little boy the last time I went, that I can remember anyway, when it was still there. And the big windows that were there, I remember seeing when I was about, I don't know, five, six, something like that. But there was a train station recently, the Genesee Brewery they tore down. All the demo they did to build the inner loop, and now they want to fill it in and put it back up again, but you're not going to get the same construction. The downtown, what's going on with that, the non-going, they keep trying to get people to come down, but, until they loosen up the parking laws around here, I'm not going to go up there. I love going to I love going downtown. It's such a country honk here in Honeyoy Falls. But, I love to, hey, look at all them tall buildings there. It's beautiful. And also the Rochester Airport. I mean, that's a nice facility now, but does anybody remember the cool paintings that be on the wall above the ticket counters? And it just seems like there's enough money around here, and we all know who these guys are with deep enough pockets, and they're never going to run out of money. Even if they gave away almost everything, they'd still live better than any of us can ever dream. And the people that want to have the new facility in Chautauqua ought to be the ones buying it. And then there's all this government money. They can always come up with government money to fix Rich Stadium up, to keep the football fans happy, which is fine.
Well,
but, you know, I mean, you know where I'm going with it, so I don't want to be at the desk. I'm known for that.
Wiley,
well, there, that's what I got to say.
Thank you, Wiley and Honeyoy Falls. Thank you, Wiley. To the point about they should be the ones buying it, largely they are. They are trying to raise private donations. And Brian Berg, they wanted to raise $30 million. They're close, aren't they?
I believe they have $30 million in change. And I think the cost, a couple weeks ago, the institution has claimed is now spiked to about $36 million. And the estimated cost of $30 million of the project was several years old already. So I think it's safe to assume that they have the money, whether it be the $36 or $30 million, to move forward. And it's all private. Now, back in 1980, when the National Park Service provided $300,000 in funds for its last major renovation, which helped them to making improvements that were sensitive to historic preservation. And so, you know, 25 years later, or 35 years later, they're really abandoning, you know, what they had taken from the National Park Service. And there are no guidelines, of course, when you do this privately. And you're really moving far away from, you know, you wrapped yourself in this National Historic designation in the early 1980s, and you took their funds. And today, you're moving away from that is, I would think, fine, be somewhat troubling and really not what is at the heart of Chautauqua.
Every phone line has been lit up, and now we're due for a break. Let's get a short break in, come back, get to more of your phone calls. You've been weighing in on Twitter as well with sites locally that you'd like preserved. Every time the Landmark Society is here, we hear from Idea, which is great, which
it's
is
fantastic.
Exactly
sure,
what we want.
Right.
So we're going to talk more about that as well with our panel after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Thursday on The Next Connections. Are you feeling the burn? Well, pardon the pun, but Bernie Sanders supporters across the country would like all of us to feel the burn. Hillary Clinton's nomination for the Democratic nod for president is not necessarily a certainty, and Bernie Sanders is the closest one to catching her. We'll find out who Bernie Sanders is and talk to local supporters Thursday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Lawley, an insurance and employee benefits broker offering Lawley Marketplace, a private employee benefits exchange that provides plan options for employees while managing company contributions. More information available at lawleyinsurance.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our guests from the Landmark Society in studio include the Executive Director, Wayne Goodman, the Associate Director of Preservation, Larry Francer. Caitlin Mavis is a preservation planner with the Landmark Society. Dirk Schneider's here. He's the principal with CJS Architects. And Brian Berg's on the line with us from Chicago. He's with the Committee to Preserve the Historic Chautauqua Amphitheater. We've been talking about that and the nature of preserving sort of these old structures and what is possible. Let me get back to the phones. And this is Josephine in Fairport. Go ahead, Josephine.
Hi. I have stood in front of a steam shovel to try to protect an ancient building, which was the Earlville Opera House. It was saved with not an awful lot of dollars and now functions as a wonderful theater during the summertime.
She's questioning Caitlin Street cred. Go ahead, Josephine.
Thank you, Joe.
It's fabulous. And as far as the train station goes, I think if it had been kept clean, it wouldn't have had to be torn down and restored and redone. But I go to Chautauqua every summer. I stay in one of the oldest religious homes there, which has not been redone. And we just love going there. I was very much opposed to redoing the amphitheater, but this summer was taken on a tour, and obviously the people that led the tour were in favor of it coming down because they pointed out all the things that are wrong with the amphitheater, including all the music that's not protected in any way. I felt, though, why do you need to tear it all down to protect music? There are definitely things that need to be done, but I love going to Chautauqua, and I love it for its history.
Well, Josephine, I think you're getting a thumbs up from a lot of people here. Thank you for the phone call. Brian Berg, should we be... is there any surprise or concern that she was on a tour? And I mean, I guess they're the folks who want changes there, so they're going to tell her all the things that they think are wrong.
Well, they're the ones that are quarterbacking it. John Shedd and Dirk Schneider was on that tour also, and so which are just three mornings a week at 8 a.m. And I'll let Dirk comment on that.
Yeah, go ahead, Dirk.
Yeah, so I went on one of the walking tours on a Monday morning. The second
did
one.
They know that you were an architect?
Yes, I met with the people that gave the tour before, so they came right over and made sure that they acknowledged that I was there. And I think based on that, the harshness of their descriptions maybe also have changed a little bit, because we got some information how the tour went the week prior, and it was very much the language they used wasn't as dire as it was the first week. So, but no, they made every effort to point out that the slabs are heaving and different things are going on, which, yes, it's an outdoor structure and it needs to be repaired. And it all, yes, we totally agree, it needs to be fixed. There's a big maintenance cost they have annually. If you do it right, you will be set for the next 15, 20 years. So, no, those tours are very well scripted to point out all the issues. And for laymen that go there for the aspect of getting inspired with people talking and music, they're not necessarily architects. They just hear all these, oh my God, I could fall in this, and are concerned about safety. So they're making a really good pledge towards your kind of, what should I say, your feelings that, oh yes, absolutely, a new thing will make it so much safer. And then I was there last week on Friday with a Q&A panel, and actually surprisingly was actually asked to join the panel. So we actually had a little voice, even so it was still all well scripted and what they wanted to say, but we were able to interject some of our corrections and thoughts to the public opinion.
We're talking about a landmark in Western New York listed this year among 11 the 11 most endangered historic places in America by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. We're talking about the Chautauqua Institution Amphitheater, built in 1893 and an annual home for great concerts and speaking series, but the home over the years to some real, real historic figures. They've got about 4,000 seats. They want to go to 4,500. They want to increase the safety, make it more code compliant, do a lot of different things to help the back of the house, make it more attractive to bringing in musicians and bands. And they're essentially saying, we need to knock it down and build it new, where the preservationists are saying, why are we doing it that way? You don't have to do it that way. There's so much more you can do. Dirk's group, CJS Architects, is trying to become part of that. And we'll see what happens over the coming weeks. But we've got listeners on the line who are kind of confused about why this is going on this way. And I think I want to grab one here. This is Steve in the city. Go ahead, Steve.
Hello.
Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, hi. This is Steve Jordan. I recently spoke with some people that have a cottage near there, and they explained to me this litany of reasons why the amphitheater had to be torn down. And they went on from it was poorly built, it was ugly, it was falling down, it wasn't that. Anyway, well, it went on and on and on and on. So I've never seen it, so I drove over there to look at it, and I found it absolutely charming. And I can't understand. I can't understand where this is all coming from. But they seem to have made a concerted effort to convince the public that it's not worth keeping.
Well, Steve, certainly you and I, I'm assuming you're not an architect, and I am not either. I mean, we can stand in a lot of places that are charming and not know the safety aspects. And I think everyone does agree that certain changes have to be made.
My background's historic preservation.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know the structural implications of the building. I just think that this is a battle of those people who respect everything new and only everything new at the expense of saving our history.
Wayne Goodman, what do you think?
I agree with Steve, and I think that I think in a sort of a larger sense, I think that this discussion is one. To maybe put a positive light on this discussion. I frankly find this to be becoming a more and more of a rarity. I think that
you mean tearing down
structures. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that we don't have to look far. I mean, we can take a look in Rochester and we can see the downtown that's being revitalized and a lot of the historic buildings that are being repurposed. Adaptive use is alive and well here. And I think that people lament the loss of structures like the Bragdon Station, and we can name others. I think that it's in all honesty, I believe that this issue with the amphitheater is a dated approach. It is a wipe the slate clean at the first sign of trouble, and you clean the slate and you build from the ground up brand new. And that was an approach that we tried in urban renewal. It didn't work out so well for us. And I think that that the people, you'd mentioned millennials. I think Brian mentioned millennials earlier. When we see people who, particularly the younger professionals, they demand authenticity. They demand a unique environment. It's about quality of life. It's about amenities. And this sort of, slash and burn approach is just simply outdated. And fortunately, it's becoming rare. With that said, I think I keep repeating, but I think it's worthy of repeating. No one has sort of, not to my knowledge, has come out and said, leave this thing alone. Don't touch it. It needs to be static. But the fact of the matter is that there are improvements needed. And I think that while the Landmark Society has been involved, and certainly from our standpoint, there are incredibly feasible approaches that will get this this structure up to date and can meet the needs for the next many, many years to come. I just think that I guess what confuses me about this whole process is that if this were to happen in Rochester with a structure, the Eastman Theater, for instance,
yep.
We would expect, and we being the community, we would expect a healthy discussion. We would expect alternatives. We would expect a rationale. Not just the Landmark Society, but everyone, I think, would expect that. And that's just not being done here. And I think that, we had that discussion. Someone mentioned the brewery building. We had that discussion. That was a tough call. I mean, the building was in tough shape. It's terrible. It's gone. But it was a tough one. It cost a lot of money. It was in bad condition. We don't have those issues here. But even with that building, we had a very healthy discussion. It was a community debate. We're not having that with this amphitheater.
Yeah, and Larry, you were nodding there. Let me bring in Larry Francer. I would think what I have a hard time understanding here is if this were the Eastman Theater, and they said we're going to have to tear it down and rebuild new, but we'll build it as close as we can to the old Eastman. But then you had an architect like Dirk come in, and you had preservationists come in and say, I understand there are problems, but it turns out we don't have to do this. I don't think the people who run the Eastman Theater would stick their fingers in their ears and say, no, we're doing it anyway.
Yeah, there's no way.
Thank you, but we're not going to talk about it. That's
an excellent point, and that's what's really, if Dirk and others that were at the Friday meeting where he was and their architect, Marty Serena, was, that people at Chautauqua are finally realizing that they've been managed by the institution, and they're tired of being managed, and they're tired of being controlled and being talked to. And it's given rise now to a whole separate issue, but it's very connected to the amphitheaters around governance and communications and transparency. And there is a large following right now on the grounds of people who are calling for a delay in the process for a year so it can be done really almost from scratch, to sit down with the people and the stakeholders and the experts and start anew, because this process, I pointed out some of those issues with how the architect being selected and his qualifications, and then seeing how these, like this person who had just called in, was being told the talking points from the institution, and people were being frightened on their tours that they're really being managed, and this is not what Chautauqua is about. It's about the Chautauqua platform of engagement and open dialogue. And so it has given way, and Dirk saw those people really standing up and not taking it anymore, if you will, pardon the phrase from William Holden. and that's really kind of what's happening right now. And I'm encouraged by the fact that people are starting to have seen through that this process was at the most was a flawed one.
Well, we're more than 2 hours away. With the phone's been ringing all hour. But Larry, can you think of anything around the country that calls to mind this kind of a process that is sort of an obstinacy that says we're just not going to consider building within the existing framework?
I really can't. And to echo what we all have been saying, this would not happen in Rochester. And I think a good reason why is because of the Landmark Society and because of the respect that we have in the community and the understanding which we are continually trying to put out there. But I think a lot of people are getting it that the Landmark Society and preservation is about economic development, and it is about what is best for a structure. And best for a structure like the amphitheater is keeping what we have and building on that.
And Evan, I think that, you know, also I think our organization really following more contemporary preservation philosophy, you know, we don't throw up a stop sign to projects unless we have a viable solution. I think that the myth maybe, and maybe that's a well-grounded myth in history, is that you throw up a stop sign and you just say, you know, don't do it or don't take it down or don't do this project.
Because it's emotional.
Right. It becomes very emotional.
Right. Yeah.
And then there's no solution provided by those people throwing the stop sign up. We have really gone away from that for a number of years. And in this particular example, there not only are we saying stop, let's wait, and there's multiple solutions that are possible.
Yeah, that's the odd part about this conversation. And before I get one more phone call in, let me ask the youngest person on the panel, and that's Caitlin Mavis, because Wayne mentioned the fact that this is an important issue for a younger generation, that sometimes when we think about the institution, for example, we think of it as a place where maybe an older crowd goes to listen to speeches or presentations or music or art, sometimes fairly, sometimes unfairly. But Wayne is saying for millennials, for those in the younger age brackets, that this authenticity is going to matter, that they do care. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, if I can speak for my entire generation.
That's what you're tasked with doing right now.
Right. You see this huge demographic shift back to urban cores. You know, whether you're talking about big cities or mid-sized cities like Rochester or even small rural villages, millennials want to be in authentic places that have a sense of place, you know, where they can walk from their apartment to the coffee shop or, you know, talk with their local butcher or what have you. And they want to be in these spaces where there is character. They don't want to be in the, you know, suburbs that they grew up in. At least that was my experience. You know, I grew up in a generic 1990s suburb, and you know, I wanted to be in an urban environment where there's character and you know, a reason to be there and an opportunity to interact with my fellow human beings in a real way. And so I think, you know, the Institute could really be shooting itself in the foot by doing something like this. That's just not what the younger generation wants. They don't want shiny, clean, and new.
It's the opposite of that. What was that dystopian town they built in Florida? A Celebration City or something like that, though? What was that?
I think that's the one that, you know, they were trying to package sort of this new urbanism approach, and it just kind of fell short. And,
the ads were always scaring me. I apologize if I'm offending anybody. Let me grab a phone call, save myself here. This is Christy in Rochester. Go ahead, Christy.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a lifelong Chautauquan. You're talking about my heart and soul. My family had a house there for 27 years. We sold it in 2011, but I go down there all the time and still know a lot of property owners. This has caused a lot of disagreement within property owners on the grounds, too. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You know, there's been a lot of quote-unquote management. The big problem with the administration, I don't think that they foresaw this pushback, and they weren't transparent to begin with. I mean, if they had just opened up the dialogue for the first year, then they would have had this public input and not maybe proceeded the way they've proceeded. Another interesting aspect that nobody's brought up yet is the Hotel Athenaeum. That is an old structure, antiquated, but yet it has so much history. Thomas Edison used to crawl in and out of the windows, and being the eccentric guy that he was, he married the daughter of one of the founders. And the Hotel Athenaeum was the very first hotel in the country to be electrified by Thomas Edison. That has a huge amount of history. They've not bulldozed that and built a modern day facility and high 5-6-star hotel because of what the Hotel Athenaeum represents. As a former property owner and a Chautauquan, I think so many of us believe, like it's already been said, transparency is key and also a compromise. We all know something has to be done. It's just getting to the place of agreement of all sides saying, okay, this we can move forward that. And as far as money, Chautauqua doesn't have problems raising money. I mean, look at that $36 million. Most of the property owners now on the grounds, most of them are the top 1% of the U.S. population. And, you know, a lot of families who inherited cottages have been forced out because of the taxes, et cetera. So that's my two cents. I wanted to say thank you for having the program and thank you for people who are fighting to keep history alive.
Christy, thank you for the phone call. And Brian Berg is on the line with us. He's with the Committee to Preserve the Historic Chautauqua Amphitheater. Go ahead, Brian. Some thoughts on that?
Well, that's, where were you going to draw the line in the sand here? If the amphitheater goes, would the Athenaeum Hotel be next? People have already, this summer, have been pointing out to me they've taken the fire escape off the rear of the Athenaeum. The same argument that they need to update the amphitheater. You could certainly say that to be a year-round resort of the Athenaeum, you need business centers, you need a spa, you need rainforest showers, you need all the things that really it goes against what brings people to Chautauqua, the charm and the quaintness of it. So it's a little bit scary and frightening of what the future would hold if the amphitheater is lost. And, of course, compromise, you know, that's why there's Secretary of Interior guidelines that people, that property owners, and in this case we believe would be a good compromise and something to adhere to. The study group put together by the institution to look at objectives and set the bar kind of going forward in 2011 told the institution they had a moral obligation to adhere to these guidelines of the Secretary of Interior. And how they got off course is something that really hasn't been well explained and, again, speaks to the governance and the transparency or lack thereof that is taking place on the grounds right now. And so that we believe that really needs to be better explained, or a timeout needs to be called and another delay perhaps.
Well,
many people are calling for.
Before we lose the hour here, let me ask our Landmark Society panelists in studio. Rochester does have its own list. Wayne, the annual list you put out is the 5-2.
Revive.
The 5-2 revive. When does that list come out? I feel like it's got to be soon here. Am I off here?
Well, I think that we're just getting ready to have our first meeting. We have a committee of folks involved in that, and we're getting ready to meet to have our first discussion. So probably early fall.
All right. When you roll that out, we'll welcome you back on this program for that. What are some of the landmarks that have been there in the past that we all sort of can recognize here that is sort of our Chautauquas that we look at and say, we should be concerned about this?
Well, I don't think that, first of all, when we have the list will be all new listings.
Absolutely.
So we don't carry over former list. But I would just say that almost in line with what's being discussed today is that one of the properties that is a former listing on our 5-day revive was the Eastman Dental Dispensary. And I can recall sitting in numerous meetings with a variety of folks, and they just said, Wayne, it's impossible. Forget it.
Let it go.
It's not going to happen. It's very expensive, but we have a great project moving forward on that. Edgemere Development and Home Leasing is obviously doing a fantastic job with that. Another, we talk about hotels. I would just also point out, too, is the historic hotels. It's interesting because if you look at the major cities or even mid-sized cities in the United States, and you look, generally speaking, not always, but generally, if you look at the downtown historic hotels, those are generally some of the higher priced hotels that you can find. And there's a fantastic, as we know in Rochester, it was a historic tax credit project that DHD Development did, which is the new Hilton Garden Inn, was the National Clothing Building on Main Street. So those are two, I think, projects that recently saved endangered historic buildings from adaptive use. New projects, I don't know. I think that there's a number of them. But I think that I think one thing that I'm concerned about is sort of what we do now with this section of Main Street in downtown Rochester. What happens with that? The former Renaissance Square area, there's probably going to have to be some compromise there. And certainly we want to be a part of that discussion. But I think that there's a variety of properties that one could make very, very solid arguments on for endangerment and adding to our list.
Okay, well, before I let Brian go, where would you direct our listeners to if they want to learn a little bit more about the efforts here to preserve historic Chautauqua? Brian, where would you send people?
To savetheamp.org, www.savetheamp.org. They can also follow along with the National Trust on Twitter at savingplaces and use the hashtag #pound11most.
Thanks for taking the time, Brian. I know it's an emotional issue for you and a lot of our listeners, it turns out. You can hear that too here. So 2+ hours away, but certainly very, very core to what is happening in Western New York, and I appreciate your time.
Appreciate your attention on this matter. Thank you.
And thanks to our panel in studio, Dirk Schneider, the principal with CJS Architects. Nice to talk to you, Dirk, and get your expertise on this issue. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having us.
And with the Landmark Society, our thanks to Caitlin Mavis.
Thanks.
Larry Francer, always nice to talk to you, Larry.
Great being here.
And Wayne Goodman, thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Evan.
And thanks to the great team that with City 12, Tej, and everyone else on our wonderful cameras around studio. If you've been watching at City 12, Time Warner Cable in the city of Rochester, hello and goodbye. Have a great afternoon. Val LaBanca, our wonderful engineer behind the glass. Smile, Val. We do have cameras around today. And Caitlin Madison as well, the excellent intern. I'm Evan Dawson. Thank you for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.